You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And we are two unwed women who every week take a nice walk down Wisteria Lane of Desperate Housewives, an ABC show from the early 2000s.
Peak time for everybody.
We like to review the retro vibes, the absolute insanity that was that time period, and all the crazy things these housewives do just to learn a few lessons about deceit, about keeping secrets, about... We have learned some friendship lessons, I would say.
Yeah, definitely so friendship lessons.
We've learned a lot, but this is a podcast where we take you through an episode of Desperate Housewives. We go in the order that they were released. So this episode, we're recapping season 2, episode 19, called Don't Look at Me. We're going to talk about where we're at with all the ladies so we're not completely lost, because these are some convoluted storylines. They're not the easy 10 episodes, even six episodes. I watched White Lotus on the plane the other day and it was 6 episodes. And I was like, wow.
Short.
Don't make them like this these days.
No. When you have 24 episodes to fill, you start getting real wild.
It's so crazy. We're going to talk about where we're at. We do our own desperate deeds so that you're all warmed up for the ladies and just so you get to know us a little bit better. If that's your vibe, if you don't want that, skip it. But then we talk about what happens in the episode. Then after that, we evaluate it on several different scales that we enjoy. It's my favorite part of the episode, so stick around for that. Yeah, we can just talk about where these ladies... Oh, besides that, I guess I should note, we drop every Monday, tune in every Monday. Mm-hmm. We have Instagram, Twitter, follow, like, share, all the stuff. Yeah. It helps us out. We appreciate you listening and talking about us and keeping us relevant. Yeah. Keep Desperate Housewives alive forever.
Oh my gosh, yes. Even if this is something that people discover in 15 years, that'd be awesome. But we need your help. Yes. It. Tell people about
when
it.
When there's another global pandemic and you're looking for a podcast to listen to, we're here. Mm-hmm. Another podcast to binge.
Yeah.
Yes. But now we can talk about where we were at last episode and where we've been. So Susan, we can just get out of the way. We don't like her. You probably don't like her. If Susan's your favorite, tell us why. And I want to hear. But yes, she and Carl have been doing this will they, won't they vibe. They've had some energy there, since they've been remarried. They got remarried for Susan to have a surgery because she had bum insurance, basically.
I don't even think she had it.
She had no insurance. Yeah. So the surgery for her wandering spleen was going to cost so much. She was going to marry this gay guy. Then he bounced on her. And then Carl's like, well, I can marry you, which seems nice overall. But Carl's a sketchy guy. We know this. So. Yeah. They get married. They've been hiding it from Edie, who is Carl's official girlfriend right now. And he proposed to her around Valentine's Day. So now they're going to get married. But he's already married to Susan secretly. So this is causing a problem. He doesn't seem to care. Basically, all this while, Susan was also dating the doctor that did her surgery, Dr. Braun. And he finds out about the marriage and he's not too happy. He's not too happy.
I wish we could have seen that conversation, but whatever. Anyway.
They end up breaking up, which we only find out last episode, because after they break up, Dr. Ron goes to Edie and says, yo, your boyfriend is married to my ex-girlfriend. So Edie's pissed. She confronts them. But then after she confronts them and throws a vase at them, she says, it's cool. Don't worry. I know how you can repay me. You're just going to throw me a bomb engagement party.
Yeah.
And Susan, you're going to bartend. While Susan's bartending, she finds a picture of her, Carl, and Julie in the bartending book, which I think Edie drinks a lot. So I think it's the bad place to put your picture if she's going to be using that bartending book.
It's just not that sneaky.
Yes. So Susan finds it. She confronts Carl. She's like, what is this? And also, tell me that you want to marry Edie, which what does that even mean anyway? It's just words. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say that. He says, Susie, baby, I'm all for you. You want me to marry her? I will. You don't? I won't. I'm all yours. I'm putty. And then Edie comes in during this conversation and he shoves her over the bed and onto the floor so that Edie does not know that Carl and Susan were even speaking.
So Carl's a coward is the big takeaway from that.
Yes.
Slimy.
He got both our kills. He got double killed. Yes, he did. I was like, we both considered Andrew last episode, but...
But Lynette got the job done for us, so we had to move on to Carl. Side note real quick, on the Desperate Housewives Reddit, so they have like Flair, which is basically just tags.
Yeah.
And then one of the top tags is Susan Meyer hate. So just saying, I really don't think they're, you're right. Seriously, if someone out there loves her, I have to know. I have to know why.
I was a fan season one. Me too. But this season has really just digressed.
I'm starting to think I wasn't a fan of Susan. I was a fan of Mike.
Yeah, I liked their will they, won't they. Mm-hmm. I liked the chase. I liked the all-encompassing love that mm-hmm. she thought she had for him.
And she was, like, really into, like, the Mary Alice storyline, too. So, yeah. They just, like, really did her dirty this season.
They did. But... They were like, fuck that.
But, yeah. So, another storyline that kind of came to a head last week was between Lynette and Bree. So, I'll mm-hmm. kind of tell it all as one story. But, essentially... Bree and Peter, her AA sponsor, which I don't even feel like he's probably her official sponsor. He was just kind of around.
He was just some dude. Yeah. He also in the group.
But he basically comes clean and tells her that he's also a sex addict, which she does not take seriously.
She laughs in his face.
She laughs. No, she treats it like it's nothing. And I'm like, sis, you should be... He's probably saving you from a trip to the doctor. So let's all just let this one slide. But she, like, kind of doesn't believe it. So she kisses him and he, like, jumps on her. So the next day... He introduces her to her new sponsor, who's Donna.
Donna.
And she is this very intense woman who we actually really love. She's no nonsense, and she's definitely not a lesbian, according to her.
But I chose to marry her last episode.
Yeah. You can turn her. It's all good. But pretty much right off the bat, Bree's, like, not feeling it, and she wants Peter back. But Peter refuses. Peter refuses her multiple times throughout the episode. And we'll kind of circle back to that. So while all that's happening... Lynette is in a position where she is on the deposition list in regards to Andrew's lawsuit against Bree for emancipation. And Bree sees the name on the list, so she goes over to Lynette's house and tries to kind of smooth things over after the whole debacle of drunkenly losing her children. And she apologizes, and they hug it out, and they kind of catch up. And Lynette gets the idea that Bree's only buttering her up for this deposition, so she point blank tells her, like, hey, I'm going to tell the truth, like, period, and whatever that does, that does. And Bree's face is definitely not vibing with that, but she kind of has no choice but to just, like, accept that information. And so in the meanwhile, at Lynette's work, the lawyer shows her the photos of Andrew, and at first she's pretty much like, no, there's no way. But then he, like, brings up the alcoholism and how she doesn't remember, and Lynette kind of starts to doubt herself and doubt Bree. However, she does her due diligence and she talks to Gabby, and Gabby's just like, no, like, I don't believe that Bree did this. Like, we've all been 17 and, like, wanted things. Like, I would have done worse things to get a car at 17.
Gabby, the voice of reason.
Yeah, Gabby points out, she's like, I too was a spoiled, bratty 17-year-old. So here's the deal. But that kind of makes Lynette doubt her doubts. So it kind of puts her in this predicament. But she plays it well, and she's driving home in her fancy Xterra that she got from work. And no, we're not paid by Nissan, but Desperate Housewives definitely was.
Yeah.
And she sees Andrew outside, and they kind of start talking, and he basically is, like, the worst ever and gets so, dazzled by the car that he, like, forgets how to manipulate. And Lynette... essentially tricks him into showing his true colors. Like, he pretty obviously just wants the money for a car, and Lynette's like, got it. So the next time we see Bree, she's rolling up to the deposition to listen, and Lynette's there, and Lynette basically lies. She says that Bree's a perfect mother, her kids are little rats that just ran away, like, it's not Bree's fault, she doesn't blame her. And the lawyer's like, well, you know, this could be perjury, you know, and Bree is an alcoholic. You lined up bottles outside of her door. And Lynette's like, no, I was just helping her with her recycling. Not a big deal. Yeah,
comes through.
Yeah, she really, like, sells it. And she's like, I hate liars. And she, like, stares directly at Andrew.
Looks at Andrew.
Yeah. Andrew being himself throws a literal pissy fit and just makes his whole case just fall apart. You'd think that Bree would be happy and this would be a big step for her towards her recovery, but... her newest addiction, Peter, decides that he
couldn't stop there.
Yeah, so he cuts her off, like, completely. And so Bree rolls up to a bar and gets really fucked up. And the next thing we see is Peter picking her up out of there and driving her home and then giving her coffee. So she clearly called him. We've all been there, super drunk, calling the guy we want.
He's never come to pick me up, though.
No. I have yet to find one that would have done that.
Yeah, but he never comes to pick me up. So, poor girl. But, yes, Gabby and Carlos, in their end, they stole a baby. If we want to just wrap everybody up, yeah. Is it really stealing? They were going to get it, but there were some complications with the baby daddy.
They were
going to
get it illegally.
Yeah, so...
So, the whole thing is...
Getting a baby illegally or just stealing it? Yeah. So, they were working with their lawyer, with this stripper, Libby, to adopt her baby, but they were paying her through gifts, and some of those gifts ended up being cash, which is mm-hmm. illegal. They didn't know that Libby was going behind their back, that she had a boyfriend named Frank, and I don't think she was ever actually planning to give away her baby. Mm-hmm. And they go to drop off one gift, and Frank is there. He's the bouncer at the strip club, and he's like, oh, gifts for our baby. And they were like, wait, hold on, our baby? And they find out that Frank is her boyfriend, but he is not the dad. Mm-hmm. And we see Libby and Frank fight about that. We don't find that out till later in the episode. At first, they think Frank is the dad, and so Carlos frantically tries to pay them $40,000. But Gabby says, don't you think that's a bit much for a baby? And she puts a dollar amount on it, and she puts it at $12,000, and we think that's reasonable for a baby.
Yeah.
So they end up going to try and give them the money, and this is where they find out that Frank is not the dad. It's some guy from a rodeo that Libby doesn't know his name. Mm-hmm. So win-win for them. They're like, don't you get it? The baby's ours. And then she has her baby, and at the hospital, Frank is drunk, and he goes there. He's like, tell me who the dad is. And Libby says, okay, it's your 19-year-old brother who is still in high school named Dale. And then they're like, fuck, there's a dad. Mm-hmm. And so they get out of that hospital super fast with the baby, and then they head home. But they are smitten with their little child. It's evoking feelings they've never felt before, as Mary Alice Young says. So there we are. Mm-hmm. And then Paul was at Edie's engagement party, but he got called out for being a murderer by Felicia, and he slinks out.
Yeah, we got to see Martha Huber's dentures in this episode.
Yeah, Felicia is on a tear about this, about Paul. So that's what's going on there. She goes to Mike and talks shit about Paul, too, but he doesn't seem to care. So that's where we're at. Yeah. It was very exciting. I got 5 apples from Jordan.
Yeah.
It got 4.5 from me. It was up there.
Regardless, as an average of 4.75. So good episode. We were great episode.
Vibing on that up. But like I said, season 2, episode 19, this episode. Mm-hmm. And before that, we could talk about our desperate deeds. Are you ready?
Yeah. I'll jump in with mine. Mine's a desperate, embarrassing childhood moment that I'll never forget till the day I die. But I want to say I was in third or fourth grade. I think third grade. And I had to puke. Because little kids, when we got to puke, you just got to puke. It's going to happen. And I remember I was like desperately trying to get my teacher's attention. And I was like, I'm going to throw up. And so she let me leave. And I'm like running. I'm fucking hustling, you know, because the last thing I want to do is puke in front of people. Well, I get to the bathroom. And you know, like the bathroom, so it's like women's room on one side, men's on the other. And there's like a water fountain between the two. I puked all over the ground right in front of that water fountain. I was steps away. I almost made it. And then I puked, and then I ran into the bathroom, puked some more. And this girl in there was like, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm like, no, you know.
I'm vomiting.
I'm like, help. And so she got like the principal, and like, obviously I went home and everything was fine. But this was a desperate deed because I did not make it, and I was trying everything I could. And it was very embarrassing because the custodian took their sweet time fixing it, and so the puke was cleaned, but there was like this huge puke stain, like there, huge. I mean, like it looked like my body exited itself or something.
Yeah.
So for like a solid few months, everybody teased me as the girl that
the puke girl,
the puke stain, like was mean. That's Jordan stain. So that was really fun. That's really fun when you're in elementary school getting made fun of. But yeah, that's my desperate deed. Some fun puking. Love a good puke story.
Okay, well, I have another one that everybody made fun of me for. I forgot about it. I mentioned it to my boyfriend one time, and he's like, why would you think of that? It was so random. I was like, I don't remember how I brought it up, but I'll tell you. So in like the fifth grade or third grade, maybe, it was one of the two. Like, our classroom got like a pet gerbil, mm-hmm. like a pet hamster. I don't know if it was a gerbil or a hamster. I'm sorry. I don't know the difference, but it was one of the two. And we were all like taking turns holding it, and it like peed on me. And like, it was fine. Everybody, like 5 or 10 people held it before me. And then it got to me and it like literally peed all over my hands. And like, people like made fun of me so hard. They were like, you're the, it peed on you, the girl that it peed on, like the gerbil doesn't like you.
No.
And I was like, I was desperate. I went to my teacher, I'm like, I don't know, like, it's peeing on me, what do I do? And like, I just washed my hands, but like, what can you do besides wash your hands?
Yeah.
But I was desperate, and it was like near the end of the school day, and I like remember I got in my mom's car and she was like, how was your day? And I like just started bawling.
No.
I was like, this gerbil peed on me. Like, everybody's making fun of me. Like,
oh my god.
For quite a while, I was like the girl that gerbil peed on.
Wow, kids are so cruel.
Yeah, I was desperate to get out of that class. I remember being like, you know, when you can like feel that you're gonna cry. Like, I remember that, having that feeling, and like running to my mom's car, basically, and like not wanting to look at anybody, but I could like hear them laughing. So. Never been so desperate to get out of school, besides the day that I bled on a chair at school. Another desperate deed, I said. 2 desperate days that I've left school just wanting to fucking get home.
Oh, man.
So, yes, the puke girl and the gerbil pee girl. Gotta love kids. I feel scared. Like, now they have so much better bullying out there. Not better. I don't mean to use the word better, but more intense bullying. You can bully in tons of different ways now. Back then, they just said shit to your face.
Yeah.
Or behind your back.
No, I do feel like it must be tough being a parent in this digital age of 1 million apps you can use to bully people. Do you remember when that app, the Burn Book app, was a thing?
No, we had one called Yik Yak when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you could just anonymously post shit, like, about people.
Like, my high school, there's like a weird app. And I remember, like, it was just our high, like our high school and the high school nearby, and it was like a burn book. Like, people were someone was posting like revealing secrets about a bunch of people.
That happened in our high school. It was a website. It was called like Tacoma Trash. I was on it.
Okay, yeah,
I was on it because like it didn't say much about me. It was just like she's slutty or something.
I was like a big geek in high school, so I luckily didn't make it onto our burn books. I never did anything worth noting, but I like had the same boyfriend. Like, I was like, okay, not easy fodder. But they did make fun of me in my face in high school, but that was a little easy.
Oh yeah, I got made fun of my face.
I was queen of the geeks for a while.
Queen of the geeks.
When I became band president, that was like the D cubed was like a big one. Dork cubed. I got called that by my math partner and then everybody in the math class. No, I was like bullied. Like, I was straight.
Sounds like something out of a bad teenage movie.
Like, I was bullied in high school.
What are you, D3 dork cube?
Yeah, because we were doing that in math, and they were like, "Hey, Jordan, you're like D cubed," and I was like, "What do you mean?" And they're like, "Cause you're in band, choir, and jazz band, dork." Like, I'm like, that's not even what D3 means. Yeah, I did. I don't know. I was like the choir. I was performing arts president, actually, because I got voted president of all three. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll just be in charge of it all.
Dang, I didn't know it was three. Whoa.
Yeah, man.
D3. They went rough. Hard for you.
It was rough, guys. And then, you know, I was the girl that played trombone, boner. There's a lot of things you could do with that. So I had my fair share in high school. That's
okay.
But well, kids are cruel is the point. Just let people like the things they like, please. And just like let them do what we want. Like, you hit your 20s and all of a sudden everybody's just like, be free, be you. And I'm like, my whole childhood taught me not to do that.
Yeah. When you hit your 20s, they were like, it was so cool that you like played an instrument and like sang in choir and you were like involved. And you're like, well, you guys fucking weren't saying that when I did it.
Yeah,
like,
that's literally why I went to community college in high school, is to get away from everybody. Oh, but I was like, all right, whatever. But it's crazy. So kids are cruel, folks. That's the point of this desperate deed.
Yes.
Kids will find a way to make fun of you. They'll find a way to
make fun of you no matter what. Even if a gerbil pees on you and you have no control over it.
That one's so funny. Oh, my God. Because it's so stupid.
So stupid. I brought it up to my boyfriend. I was like, yeah, like, have you ever had a gerbil pee on you? He was like, what the fuck happened to you? I was like, it's just a memory that sticks. Like,
yeah, it's weird, the ones that stick. It's funny.
Okay, man. Well, we can get into our recap. Watch along on Hulu or Amazon Prime if you'd like. All the episodes are on there. And before we go, we're going to tell you to buckle up.
Buckle up.
Gabby learns a hard lesson about parenting an infant. The sex talk arrives earlier than Lynette anticipated. The war between Andrew and Bree comes to an end after her father and stepmom visit. Susan contemplates all of her many relationships. Well, I feel like Mrs. McCluskey taught me just how to give the sex talk, just to shame them.
I have to say, it was refreshing to hear her openly say, like, no, we want to shame them. Like, yes, that is the point.
I like her old school, like, Boston Irish. I get a Boston Irish vibe from her. Like, I just like her just straightforwardness and no filter. Yeah, what are you doing that for?
Yeah, I totally feel like she could, like, win a Boston, like, bar fight.
Oh, for sure.
That's the kind of person you want watching your kids. Lynette's stupid.
I don't know why Lynette was like, this. Why do you want this old broad watching our children? Like, she was so weird about it. And I'm like, okay.
Because she could literally take, like, she could kick anyone's ass. And, like, I don't know. She's a badass.
She doesn't have anything else to do. Yeah. So I really like the sex talk we get. The two versions of the sex talk. There's the seed and you just, it grows. And like, Lynette's not getting how a kid's brain works. Yeah. So it was a strong episode. And we also get a surprise guest star, Kyle MacLachlan.
Anytime he pops up anywhere, I'm happy. Like,
AKA
I just love
Ray
him.
McDougal. Yes. Oh, so it was packed, you guys, but we can go ahead and get started. We do start with Lynette's storyline. We meet Louisa Pate. She believed in the power of shame. She's a teacher, and she found the best way to control unruly kids was to shame their parents. So that is ends up being the theme of our episode, is everybody's different shame for different things. Some should be more ashamed than others, I'll say. AKA Susan should be more ashamed than anybody. So she shames their parents over the kid who, like, killed a rabbit, the one who brought Nazi memorabilia for show and tell, which, wow. And then the ones who beat up kids for lunch money. And she knew when it came to unruly children that some kids had more reasons to be ashamed than others. And we cut to Lynette talking to Louisa, and she's like, Parker was involved in an incident. And Lynette wants to know what kind of incident. And she says he offered Cindy, he offered this girl Cindy a cookie to show him her vagina. And I'm like, wow, I've been there. No, I've never been there. Nobody's ever offered me a cookie. And she says, what? Lynette tries to make light of it. She says, what kind of cookie? And Luis is like, doesn't matter. And the janitor caught them with her skirt up. So obviously this chick accepted the cookie, which concerning for a 7-year-old or whatever. I'm sure that you notice Parker gets obsessed, just like he did when he got obsessed with dinosaurs. But now he's obsessed with what's underneath girls' clothes. And Lynette's like, he's just curious about the human body. It's normal. And she's like, well, you need to talk to him about what's appropriate and what's not. And she's like, I will. And then it made me think of that episode where they became friends with, like, that couple that shot their own porn. I'm like, maybe Parker saw more than we know.
I know. Maybe he was like low-key traumatized.
Yes. When they saw that video. They saw the video. Yeah. So, yes, Louisa believed in the power of shame. And she also believed when someone had the power, it was a shame not to use it. And then she's talking to Cindy's parents and she's like, you'll never guess what your girl will do for a cookie. And it's super cute.
Yeah, no, I love that. It was a good opening.
It was a good cold open. Great cold open. So then we hit our intro and we get thrown into the not so lovely, not so funny world that the not so lovely hell that Bree is going through. Mm-hmm. But we find out that she's now dating Peter. So it had been 6 weeks since Andrew declared war on Bree. The final battle was about to be waged at the courthouse. Knew it was about to get bloody. What she didn't know is the cavalry was on its way and whether she wanted it or not. So we get a couple of immediate surprises. Mm-hmm. So Danielle called Bree's mom and we meet Bree's stepmom. We find out this is not her actual mom. It's her stepmom and her dad are there. And she's dating Peter, holding his hand. And I'm like, he didn't even like redheads. And he also was very firm that he didn't like her. So confused how this happened. But here we are. So she introduces Peter, the AA sponsor, to her stepmom and her dad. And they think he's the lawyer at first. He's like, no, no, no. And they make a comment about his long hair, which I think is luscious. And Andrew just tells them, yeah, he's an AA with mom. And everybody's like, what? Like, Bree's an AA. And Bree's like, where is dad? And he's in the chambers. He comes out and he's like, the judge agreed to a postponement. He remembered me when we went to law school together. So he's mm-hmm. apparently some type of lawyer. And Carl, who's Bree's lawyer, is like, I mean, I've been waiting for this hearing for weeks, so this is kind of not good. Mm-hmm. These types of cases can turn into spectacles, Bree's dad says. Our family can handle this in-house. And Carl's like, it can get kind of ugly. And the dad is like, that's why we're here. We're going to put this family back together no matter what it takes. Mm-hmm. So that sets us up for an interesting storyline that features Justin. I love a Justin feature mm-hmm. For Bree. But if you would you want to take them through what happens yeah. with Bree becoming overall accepting of Andrew's quote unquote lifestyle?
Yeah, this was a really good episode or for Bree, like the storyline. So yeah, let's jump right in. So later, after this little opening at the courthouse, the family's all at the table and Bree's dad decides he's going to try and make them move past things. And he's very naive to the situation. So
he didn't know what he was walking into. Oh, I feel I like know. Danielle called him and she's like, Andrew and mom are like going to court or something. Like I feel like Danielle doesn't even fucking know what's going
on. Does she live there? Where is she?
She's hanging out with fucking Matt.
I guess. It's like she left the show or something. So he tells them that they need to say they forgive each other. Like, literally, I'm not, like, chopping
he's
this
doing
down.
That's some, what like, he says. Yeah, psychotherapy shit. Yeah, like
something he saw on TV.
he saw it on Dr. Phil.
Yeah, and, like, the stepmom's like, it worked with me and our housekeeper. And I'm like, oh, my God, I bet she's such a cunt to the housekeeper. Which we'll bleep that, sorry. But Andrew agrees to do it to kind of mess with Bree. And he's, like, he's essentially just playing this the best way he can to get into his grandfather's graces. But Andrew goes first and they start to like go at it and they just decide to reveal everything. So he's like, hey, like Bree hit me after I asked her to stop drinking. And Bree's like, well, he ran over a woman while he was drunk and killed her. And then Andrew's like, well, mom dated a guy who ended up being the murderer of dad. And then he killed himself while she watched. And then he's like, well, Andrew's accusing me of molestation so he can get emancipated and have money. And everyone just stands there or sits there like
and then
shocked.
She reveals how he ran over Mama Solis.
Yeah.
Did you already say yeah. that? Sorry. There were so many. Yeah, I'm like, no, sorry, there's just so many on the list of things.
Oh, no, there's a lot. So Bree is like, so her dad is just sitting there shocked. Like, all right, I guess this method won't work.
Yeah, I guess we can't solve this with a simple I forgive you.
Yeah. So later, Bree comes downstairs and her stepmother's down there, Eleanor. And Eleanor's doing her hair for the next day. Her wig.
Her wig. She's styling a wig yeah. like a bad bitch.
So Eleanor tells Bree that they're going to take Andrew back to Rhode Island with them. Bree is very adamant that they're not going to do that. So she's like, if you try, I'm going to take you to court. And Eleanor's like, you never give up. I admire you for it, but man, you never give up, even when it's time. And she tells the story of these peanut butter cookies that Brie was determined to get right, even though they always sucked. And she's like really fucking mean about it. And Brie's like, well, my mom liked them.
Tells an obscure story.
Yeah. And Eleanor's like, well, I know that like you resent me because basically Brie's like, every kind word I ever had like got from you, I had to like work so hard for.
Yeah.
And she basically says that she resents her for that. But Brie's like, no, I don't resent you for that. I resent you because those cookies kicked ass. And Brie's like, please don't take Andrew with you. Eleanor says that Andrew hates her and that being an adult means admitting you failed and moving on. So Brie asks Eleanor if she thinks she's a failure as a parent. And Eleanor says, well, I'd love to lie and say something supportive. But as you pointed out, that was more your mother's thing.
Ooh.
Which was like sad.
Burn.
I'm like, they talk about Brie's mom so cavalier. Like, last season we kind of got that one episode where Brie talks about it and her mom was like fucking killed by a hit and run in the middle of the street, which is ironic considering what Andrew did.
I know,
but so that must have been a little like traumatizing for Brie. But yeah, no, it's super depressing, and Eleanor definitely fucked Brie up a little bit. Might be why her standards are literally impossible.
Yeah.
So later we see Brie watching through the window as Andrew and Justin are arguing outside. And it was kind of a weird juxtaposition because Justin's standing on the street or on the sidewalk and Andrew's in the car on the street. It almost feels like they shouldn't be at Brie's house.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck's happening.
They needed an excuse for Brie to overhear it, I guess.
Yeah.
So they freak out and they're arguing back and forth. And then Andrew ends up driving off. And Brie goes outside and asks Justin what's going on.
I'm also like, what car? Like, you didn't have a car.
It looked like a convertible, too.
Oh, his old convertible? I don't know.
No, they gave that. They left that thing in the fucking...
Oh, yeah. I'm just like, the whole thing was that Andrew wanted to be emancipated so that he could get his trust fund to get a car. So, like, what car is he driving off in now?
Maybe he's driving his grandpa's.
Whatever, yeah.
So, Brie's talking to Justin, and Justin says that he's sad because Andrew is leaving and broke up with him. And Brie offers some empathy, and Justin's like, I love Andrew.
Yeah, he's like, we're more than friends. I love him.
Yeah.
She's like, why? What?
And he's like, look, Andrew supported me because when I came out to my parents, they basically told me that I am an abomination and that I need to get out.
You're like, get lost.
Yeah. And Andrew told him that he's not the problem. They are. And they're the ones that need to fuck off. And he's like, how can you not love someone who doesn't take any crap? And I'm like, yes, Justin, but there is a line.
As he saw him, as he saw Justin steal his mom's credit card, or not saw, as he saw Justin, as Justin saw Andrew steal his mom's credit card, as he saw Andrew ask him to beat him up for his emancipation case.
Yeah.
Lie about being sexually molested.
I don't know.
Doesn't take any crap. There's a line. Yeah.
So... later we see Andrew like packing, or it's his grandparents that are packing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like helping Andrew pack up his stuff. And she brings down these porno magazines and leaves them. She's like, these are Andrew's. And Bree's dad like starts like looking through them, and Eleanor's like, hey, stop.
She's like, why are why are all these men?
Yeah, like, she's like, stop looking at it. He's like, it's all men. And he's like disturbed by it, and like they're like reading through it and they realize what the situation is. So later we see Andrew and he comes in the kitchen where Brie's cooking dinner, and he is freaking out because he was left a letter basically being told that they're not gonna take him with them and that they canceled his trust fund. So even if he gets emancipated, there's no money. And I don't know what they said in the letter, but it's obviously because they're extremely homophobic. So basically he's trapped now with Brie. So she tells Andrew that she invited Justin over for dinner. So they, you know, and that throws him off. You kind of watch Andrew like be kind of like, oh shit, like what, can't get mad at that. Like, yeah. Oh God. And so like it kind of throws his plans, but for that, their story kind of ends on that note and them eating dinner all together. And it's sweet. And I think like this is a great example of like a way that conservative parents can kind of come around to their kids. Like,
yeah.
Even though she probably still votes against gay marriage, she at least loves her son. So it doesn't...
Yeah, she's at least accepting Justin now, which I appreciate because he never did anything real wrong in the situation. So I'm glad. It was nice to see. Like, he shouldn't be ashamed of it. And like, at least Bree's not making him feel ashamed of it.
Well, and a big reason why Andrew like hates her is because of how she reacted to him being gay. And yeah. I'm kind of like, okay, so, like, now what is his motivation? Like, aside from, I mean, I guess the George situation is his motivation now. But yeah. before that, though, this was the main, like, thing driving him.
Yeah.
So...
And they're all still grieving. We don't really know our timelines on these, but we do know that George and Rex probably died within the last year.
Few months.
Yeah, a few months. So it feels like. I feel like there's a lot going on for them.
Because it's only been a year since Mary Alice died.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. The timeline's bonkers. So, anyway.
Another person who went to court is Gabby. So they start off their storyline in court because they stole a baby last episode. So their lawyer says they feared for the safety of the child. That's a good case to make. And the judge is like, they kidnapped her. And she's like, technically true, but the situation that led up to, and then the judge is like, kidnapping. And I'm like, dang, they're really out for them. They're like, the plan was not thought out. Like, you know, it was rash. And they're asking if they can object or the defenses, and all we ask is to allow Lily a lifetime of care and love from the Solis family. And they're talking about there's this issue of parental rights because they located the father, and you'll never guess what the father is up to. He's out of town in Fort Lauderdale, which is so trashy. I mean, it's like near Miami, but
I have so many questions though about this family. Like, so the brother is like a bouncer at a strip club. The other brother is in high school and is going to Fort Lauderdale. Like, who are the parents? Do they have money?
Yeah, like a Fort Lauderdale front, because obviously, I think this is supposed to be in the suburbs of California somewhere, wherever they are. Fairview. Yeah. That's the vibe I get. So going to Fort Lauderdale is not cheap.
If you're like a super senior and your parents are shipping you off to Fort
Lauderdale, for spring break, because I didn't even finish. Yeah, he's there for spring break, you guys. Yeah. I don't know. They must have some sort of money. Something's up with this. So they say he's in Fort Lauderdale on business. No, on spring break. So he's in high school. But they are asking if he said that he wanted parental rights. The only communication they got is a text that says it blows his mind and he's completely bummed out. Mm-hmm. So super mature. It's silent in the courtroom. And then, since you want Lily and you're the lesser of two evils, temporary custody will be granted until we get straight answer from the dad. In the meantime, don't steal any more kids. Mm-hmm. Gabby's like, we just needed the one. So I love it. Then we cut to Bree, Lynette, and Susan over at Gabby's, and they're all ogling over the baby. And they're talking just about how cute she is. Lily was Gabby's grandmother's name. And she's like, they're all like, how are you holding up? Being a mom so hard. And she's like, a little tired, but not too bad. And they're just like, a couple months you'll be sleeping through the night. And then she mentions a nanny. And Carlos hears the word nanny and he's like, what? Yeah, he turns like- around. He's like, what you thinking? Mm-hmm. No, we never talked about a nanny. He is not on board with a nanny, and they get into an awkward fight in front of their friends. And then Susan, Bree, and Lynette are like, we'll just leave and let you hash this out. And Gabby's like, don't worry, I got this. And Carlos has some strong stances. He mm-hmm. says, a brand new baby needs time to bond with his mother. The church knows it. Science knows it. And I'm like, dang. You don't got to like throw the church in there all mm-hmm. of a sudden. And she says, what's wrong with a little help? Like, I can be a better mother. And he says, you want to be a better mother? Be like my mom. And I'm like, okay. and he says, my mom worked herself to the bone for me. And she says, that's what put her in her early grave. And she's like, and the hit and run. And so we'll never forget the hit and run.
Also, like, sorry, Carlos. I don't think that being a parent means driving yourself to being a monster. Like, you're allowed to be, do things for yourself.
If you have so much money and so much luxury, like, why would Gabby have to work? Like, there's a difference between giving care and like working yourself to the bone. Like, I don't really know what he wants from her.
I don't know either. I'm like, do you expect this child to be extremely difficult? Like, what do you mean? And like, I get, like, I think it was a bit excessive for her to be like a nanny and a night nurse and all. I'm like,
yeah, she mentioned a couple different things.
I'm like, pick one, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
You can have a nanny.
All right, spend some time with your kid. I get Carlos could have argued that a lot better, I feel like.
Yeah, he could have argued a bit better. I don't really quite know what he's looking for there. Mm-hmm. I feel like she can't even really breastfeed because it's not her baby. So, like, I just, like, there are, you still have to feed the baby, but, like,
yeah,
it's obviously not as hard on your body as, like, maybe actually giving birth, but whatever. So, Carlos is confused. But next thing we know, the baby's crying, and Carlos is like, yo, Gabby, and it's the middle of the night. He's like, yo, Gabby, go help the baby. And she's like, I already checked twice. Or, yeah, she says that. And he says he has job interviews, so he can't. So now we see the type of dad that Carlos is thinking is fine to be while Gabby has to do everything. Mm-hmm. And she says, when am I supposed to sleep? And he says, you sleep when the baby sleeps. Like, what else do you do around here? And I'm like, okay, this guy is such a dick.
What does he do around
and, there? And he says, Yami does all the housework. And this is a pretty in-depth argument for the middle of the night. I think I would get like five words out. Gabby gets the baby and takes her to Yami. And Yami is like, is something wrong? And she's like, the baby won't stop crying. And I haven't slept for 2 days. Please take her. And she's like, what do I do? Hold her, bounce her, just do something. Gabby gets in bed and she's like, don't tell Carlos. And then that's that. And we see Xiaomin take care of the baby for the night. Next thing we know, Gabby's going to yoga and she sees Xiaomin sleeping on the table. And she's like, oh, no worry. I know you were up with my baby all night. Thank you for that. By the way, I got you this gift card to a spa. Use it how you like. And then she's also like, motherhood's such a blessing. I hope you get to do it one day. And I'm like, wow, how backhanded. Yeah. And she also hands Xiaomin the baby while she says this. She's like, can you take care of this baby while I do yoga?
This is where like spoiled Gabby starts to get a little like, come on, you wanted this kid. What are
you doing? A little bit out of control.
Yeah, I'm like, what? Did you, like, do you want this child?
So Gabby is getting ready to go somewhere now and she can't find Xiaomin. And she's literally like yelling through her house and she's like, Xiaomin, okay, bye. She does not check on her baby whatsoever. She does not check that there's any supervision. And she just says, we'll be back in a bit. She heads to lunch with Bree. And she's like, sorry, I'm late. And Bree's like, I know that you have a new baby and I'm surprised that you even made it. Mm-hmm. And then she also orders a drink like right in front of Bree, which I think is disrespectful to your sober friend, your new newly sober
friend. They know,
friend.
Right?
Yeah, I think they all know. Everybody seems to know.
Lynette was talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, at least for the first maybe year, like, try to do events for her where it's
or,
like
you're just going to lunch. Just, yeah. You know that she's sober. I don't know. Whatever. So just
drink before she gets there.
She's like, I'll definitely have a drink. New motherhood. Yeah. So then Bree reveals that she saw Xiaomin at the spa like 20 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, like I saw Xiaomin. Like she was just there. And Gabby starts to freak out because she's like, holy fuck, my baby is at home with no super fucking vision. And Gabby speeds home to find her unattended baby. And she's like, I'm never going to leave you again. And then Carlos comes home from his interview. It was canceled. And she's now just doing yoga with a baby. So Gabby's got some lessons in motherhood to learn.
Yeah. And I think if Carlos wasn't so extreme, like they could actually have a discussion and he could actually explain what he meant. Because, like, I do think he really just meant, like, she needs to be there for the baby.
Yeah.
And I think, like, he just worded it so poorly because his mom technically had to work her fingers to the bone because they had no money. But, like, he needs to, like, shift his view based on the circumstances they're in. Yeah. And he could say to her, like, hey, I love the idea, like, yes, let's get you help. However, I need to know that, like, you're prioritizing the baby and not yourself. And I think that is over. Like, just learn to communicate, people. Like, I feel like I'm going insane.
Use your words, Carlos.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want me to jump into Susan or Lynette?
Whichever you'd prefer.
That's you. My notes on Susan are a little more in depth, so maybe I'll.
Yeah, you can go ahead with Susan.
I'll refrain. I won't be as harsh. So, Susan rolls up to Carl and Edie's to talk to him, and she confronts him, and she basically was like, why did you, like, she confronts him for trying to fuck her at the party. Like, what are you, like, what's your game, essentially?
Yeah.
And Carl's like, well, you want it. And she's like, you're sick. Like, I'm not. Like, what the fuck? And it's like, Susan, is he sick, though? Or are you really, you're kind of giving the vibe.
I feel like, Susan, you're giving a vibe. You're like, giving the vibe. Like, how Donna was like, if you get a vibe, it's all you.
Yeah.
I feel like, no, if he got a vibe, it was really because you were into him.
I just feel like Susan, like, cannot accept that she is involved in this at all. Like, yeah. It's like, she just can't. But the next thing we know, she gets some flowers delivered, and Julie's pissed off about it because they're from Carl. And Susan tries to claim that she's not egging him on, but Julie is like, no, you are, and I don't want you to go to the movies with me.
And they were going to go. Those flowers, that's called love bombing.
Yes, yes.
It's a sign of emotional, a potential emotional abuse. Or narcissism.
Yeah.
When they are flowering you with gifts when that was not how they are normally going to act in their relationship.
Yeah, no, it's just a way for him to, like, confuse her.
Yes.
So, Julie, because while this is happening, they were supposed to go to the movies together. And Julie's like, I'm not fucking going with you. Like, mm-hmm. Have fun. Like, I'm just done. You'd think, like, at a certain point, Susan would be like, oh, my child's, like, really angry with me. Maybe I should, like, do something.
Susan goes to the movies alone.
Yes, I'm like, how do you call a family therapist and, like, you guys go together and then you get told by a therapist what you're doing wrong, lady. But whatever. So she's at the theater and she sees Mike on a date and she starts panicking. So she finds the nearest man that's there by himself and asks him to be her boyfriend, pretend to be her boyfriend. And it's a man that is played by our favorite, Kyle MacLachlan.
A.K.A. Trey McDougal from Sex and the City.
Yeah.
I wrote in all caps in my notes, Kyle MacLachlan.
I love Kyle MacLachlan. I feel like he's one of those actors where you've seen him in something and you liked him in it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Whether it's Twin Peaks or whatever. Like, he's great. Like, yeah. Love him. He does it. He totally leans in. He helps her out. Like, I honestly was like, wow, Susan, you got so lucky. And so Mike's, like, asking them how they met, and he's clearly jealous. And Orson tells him that he's her dentist, and he just, like, couldn't get enough of her from getting in there in her mouth. And Mike decides to walk away at that point because he's like, all right, cool. And Orson, his name's Orson, his real date rolls up, and Susan's like, oh, shit, because she was kind of trying to, like, make some moves after that. And his date is named Becky, and she looks like she lives in the year 2006 for sure.
she looks like a Becky.
Yeah, like, it was pretty on the nose. Later, Orson shows up at Susan's house, and he gives her his card. I believe, did she leave her wallet, or what was
the deal? Yeah, she left her wallet there. Yeah.
I was like, how did he find that? Because
she's like, how did you find my address?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's like, when you ducked out, you left your wallet, and I put mm-hmm. my card in there in case you want to hang out sometime.
Yeah, so he kind of, like, tries to ask her out, but she's like, things are complicated, and she, like, word vomits.
Also, I'd be like, what about Becky?
He's just dating around. So he's tomcatting, it's fine. But the next, like, it's like kind of like she's basically like, I'm complicated, and then it's like hard cut to them sitting at the table with drinking coffee or tea or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's listening, and he basically recaps back to her what's been happening the past few episodes. And Susan's like, you're a stranger, so I feel comfortable talking to you about this because, like, you're kind of, like, not close with any of us. And she tells him that she's starting to have feelings for Carl again, and she feels terrible. And he's like, you're not terrible, but you are a sucker because you're dealing with Carl, who is 100% a coward and is treating you poorly. And he's like, Carl just wants you to take the big hits. He's like, he's literally going to let you take the fall for everything, and you're going to be his scapegoat. And very wise words, I have to say.
Yeah.
Wise words, sir. Very true. So Susan meets up with Carl as he is auditioning a wedding band at a bar mitzvah. I have to say, when it cut to that, I was like, who in the show is having a bar mitzvah? Like,
I know, that's what I said. It's like, Susan finds Carl at a bar mitzvah, yeah. ?
I was like, really confused.
Okay.
Like, this show is, like, weirdly, like, there's literally not a single Jewish character. Which is, like, kind of throws
me off. Also, like, auditioning wedding bands is, like, not even 2006. That's like 1995 mm-hmm. to me. Like, I can't, like, why did you have a wedding band? Like,
yeah, no. So it was funny. I was looking at my notes. I'm like, a wedding band? I was thinking rings, but I was like, oh yeah, duh. So Susan gets mad at them. And then Carl, like, clearly had set it up for the band to play their song. So like their song starts playing and they dance and she's like, "You're a coward. Like, you haven't changed at all. Please stay with Edie." I'm like, "Why'd you even dance with him at all?" I'm like, "Just walk away," but whatever. So later Carl shows up at Susan's and he's like, "I broke up with Edie. I didn't do it for you. I did it because it was the right thing to do and I am a coward." And I'm like, are we all just gonna buy that he did this 180 in a day? Like, what is happening? The next thing we see is Susan waking up in bed with Carl. And
she fell for it.
She
invited him in. She said, "Don't you want to come in? We can have some wine." And you know what wine does to people.
Especially lonely moms. This shit was brutal. So she tells Carl that she feels good about them. Next thing, they get a call on the house phone and Susan answers. And it's Edie. And Edie asks if Carl's there. And she's like, "Yeah." And Carl takes the phone and he's like, "Yeah, I'm just here helping Julie with her homework." And he agrees to go to the store. Susan's like, "What the fuck? Why are you going to the store for Edie? Like, I thought, like, you guys are broken up. Like, why would you do that?" And he's like, turns out I'm a fucking lying piece of shit. Shocker. We are not broken up. And I just couldn't leave Edie without knowing that you wanted me. But now I know. So, like, it's all good. We see Julie downstairs shaking her head as Susan comes running down the stairs after Carl throwing shit at him and screaming at him. And she tells him not to call her. And I'm like, you know, Susan, like, literally everybody tried to warn you. Like, what is it going to take at this point? I have to ask that question, but whatever. So that's where Susan's left off on this
episode. Yeah. My favorite is that when he talks to Edie, he's like, "Oh, I'm just over here helping Julie with her civics homework." Mm-hmm. He like acts so nonchalant about it. Yeah. Like, and she's like, "What the fuck?"
That's like sociopathic lying.
Sociopathic.
He was so calm about it. He's like, "Yeah, I'm just helping her out."
That's literally like my ex. Like the behavior of my ex. Like, what are you, like, what the fuck is happening? And mm-hmm. it throws your head for a loop. So yeah. Fuck Carl. Mm-hmm. I feel like, yeah, it's stupid that Susan fell for it. But at the same time, fuck Carl more so than mm-hmm. being mad at Susan in this episode for me. Like, she's still stupid, but, like, Carl's worse. Like, he's just setting up, like, heartbreak. So, yeah, that fucking blows.
Yeah. Yes, Carl's definitely the worst person. I just mean, like, there's a certain point where it's, like, how many times is Susan going to be the victim with Carl?
Yeah, I wouldn't say she's the victim. I would say,
well, how many times is she going to paint herself?
Yeah, she paints herself that way. I feel like if she went about it, like, "I made another dumb choice." Like,
but she doesn't view it that way.
She never views it that way.
He is a lying piece of shit. I am just being.
She's like, "I was just being me. I trusted him." But it's like, why?
Why is this?
Why did you trust him? So, not poor Susan. Just, poor Julie.
Yeah.
But picking up where we left off with Lynette and her situation with Parker, who is now interested in sex, if you recall, all mm-hmm. the way from the beginning. Next thing we see, she's talking to Parker. She's having the talk that Miss Louisa Pate said that she needed to have. And she says, "The teacher told me about the cookie with Cindy." Mm-hmm. And he says, "Are you mad?" And she's like, "Not exactly, but I want to understand." Yeah. And he said, "Tommy said babies come from there. And that doesn't seem right." And I agree. Like, what fucked up?
I agree too.
What fucked up type of evolution happened mm-hmm. that we're this way or whatever you believe?
Part of me wishes we laid eggs. Like, that'd be absolutely. So much easier.
If
I love
could
it.
Just lay this egg every month.
Put it in the incubator.
I would love that. But instead, we grow it inside of us.
Yuck.
It's horrible. So, great. Parker, same question.
On point.
And Lynette's like, "He's got the concept, right?" And mm-hmm. then Parker's like, "Well, how does a baby get in there?" And she's like, "Daddy's going to come home in a few days. And why don't you ask him?" And she sips her wine. And she said, Parker says, "Or I can ask Tommy's brother. He knows everything." And I'm like, he doesn't seem like a reliable source. Lynette takes charge and draws it out. She gets a pen and a paper. And she says, "When mom and dad love each other, they hug real tight." And I think that's a mistake. You shouldn't be telling kids. My parents told me that two people lay naked in bed together. And I'm like, why are they so afraid to put the rest of the details in there? Like, why would they just lay next to each other naked? And then your kid grows up thinking for quite a while that people just lay together naked and things happen.
Yeah. I have to say, if you describe sex, like, clinically, like, it's not going to be this. I guess, like, what's the big fear? Because I feel like I found out what sex was relatively young just because my parents were, like, kind of open. And it didn't really make that much of a difference.
I don't know. I'm just like, what makes the difference between people laying in bed naked and then like them actually like a penis going in a vagina?
I just think like there's a way to talk about it with like, what, I don't know, you don't have to show them a porno.
You can talk about it anatomically. Yeah, just be like, you have a penis, I have something else. And sometimes when two people love each other, mm-hmm, they put them together.
You just say like the woman has like the one part of what makes the baby inside of her and the man has the other. Like,
yeah, what two things combine. Like there's
like really like you can dumb it down, but like I don't
yeah
know.
Yeah. So she says they hug real tight and the seed is planted and 9 months later a baby is born. And he says, what kind of seed? She says, not important. He says, I don't believe you. I'm your mother and mothers don't lie to their sons. Now wash your hands or Santa won't come. And so Lynette comes home after having Mrs. McCluskey babysit and she's eating a fudgesicle. And she's asking, how did it go? She goes, fine, Penny fussed, the twins fought, and Parker wanted to see my vagina. He offered me a fudgesicle to see my vagina. And she's eating one, and Lynette's like, and she's like, calm down, I just got this out. And she says, apparently he wanted to put a sunflower inside me to see if a baby would grow. And Lynette is like, oh shit, that was me. He asked me about the birds and the bees, and I fudged a few details. And Mrs. McCluskey is like, what the fuck? And she said, he's seven, he doesn't need to know everything. And she's like, I don't want to rob him of his innocence. She says, no, you're wrong. You got to get them while they're young. Mm-hmm. And you give them all the gory details. And then when they're good and disgusted, you shame them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Mrs. McCluskey, you tell them sex is dirty and wrong and that if he does it, he will go straight to hell. And she says, that's ridiculous. She says, spoken like a true liberal idiot. And she's like, I'm not going to shame my son. And Mrs. McCluskey swears it works. It keeps people in their place. It keeps parents from being humiliated. It keeps me from having to spend the afternoon talking about my woo-woo.
I have to say, Karen's being quite the Karen right now.
I love her. I love it. It keeps me from talking about my woo-woo. Yeah.
Love it.
So, next thing we know, Lynette talks to Parker and she's like, for God's sakes, you can't ask people things. You can't keep asking girls to show them their vaginas. He's like, why? And she's like, it's rude. And he's like, not to me. And she's like, it doesn't matter. You got to quit talking to people about their bodies and babies. It's not appropriate. And she's like, well, he's like, why? And she's like, because it's not. It's dirty. And and she thinks about it for a minute. And she goes, it's dirty and it's wrong. And I'll wash your mouth out with soap. And that's why. And she said, she saw a look on his face she had never seen before. And she thought of all the other faces he made when he was obsessed with stuff. And it occurred to Lynette, she didn't need to shame her son. Mm-hmm. He just needed a new obsession. And that's how Lynette and Tom got a dog.
Which, in the chaotic household they already live in, I'm like, a puppy? I'm like, wow, she really would rather just add the chaos than handle this, which is kind of hilarious.
It's so wild. So they now have a dog, and that's what's up with Lynette. But do you want to talk about what happened with Paul and Felicia?
Yeah, so we had a brief couple scenes in this episode with Paul. And if you were just tuning into the show this episode for whatever reason, you would totally think that this is the main, like, mystery of the season.
It's not.
But it's not. We just never see the Apple Whites, apparently. So there's three scenes. So the first time Paul's coming outside and he eats it, like, walking down the stairs in front of his house. And he's like, what the hell? And there's, like, shortening. And Felicia lives next door and she pops her head out. And she's baking. So she makes it very clear, passive-aggressively, that she put the shortening there. Next time, Paul lights his barbecue, and it almost explodes because someone had added or already put a ton of lighter fluid in there. And again, Felicia pops her head out and is like, oh my god, are you okay? And he plays it cool and invites her over and tells her if she wants a burger, she can have it, because he's refusing to play her game, as he tells Zach. Mm-hmm. Then, last but not least, Paul and Zach are in their home, and all of a sudden it gets really dark. And they run outside and they're getting tented for termites. And Felicia comes running out of her house and she's like, oh my God, I put it on the wrong address. Like, and this, like,
she's
too much.
She's getting him, though.
Yeah, too much for Paul. He freaks out because he's like, what the fuck? And she goads him and he attacks her, which is what she's trying to do. So we kind of set the, we planted the seeds of what exactly Felicia's game is. And it seems like she's really trying to get Paul to do something terrible so she can get him in trouble. And so it was kind of fun, though. It was fun, that those little scenes sprinkled throughout the episode. It was good. Just, like, the right amount, I feel
yeah.
like. So, yeah, that's kind of where the episode left us. And again, like I said, no Applewhites, so, which means no Danielle.
Yeah, ever. No Danielle. She's out of the series yeah. until further notice.
Yeah.
All we know is that she made a phone call. Mm-hmm. So Mary Alice Young takes us out. She says, we've all done something in our lives that we're ashamed of. Some of us have fallen for the wrong man. Some of us have let go of the right woman. And there are those of us who have humiliated their parents and those who have failed their children. Yes, we've all made mistakes that diminish us and those we love, but there is redemption if we try to learn from those mistakes and grow. Mm-hmm. So I like her message at the end of yeah. it. And I think everybody hits their theme pretty well. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Susan, because I don't know how ashamed she actually was of hooking up with Carl.
Maybe we'll have to find out. They should have made that more clear, because I feel like they kind of cut it right
they
before
did cut we it yeah they weren't she we didn't see her looking like remorseful really. Mm-hmm. She was just angry at him.
Yeah.
So yes, that's what happened there. Mm-hmm. And I guess we can just go into our fuck, marry, kill.
I mean, I think we have the same fuck.
Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah.
I was going through my head. I'm like, we didn't see a Mike. Mike. Yeah. Oh, we did see Mike. Oh my God. Kyle MacLachlan outshined him so much. I forgot we saw Mike.
Yeah. That's how.
That's it's horrible.
It's his hair, I feel like. He has it's just like really, nice. Like, he styles it nicely, whereas Mike just has like a fucking like police officer's haircut.
Mike has a bad haircut. Yeah. He needs to fix that.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you want to go first?
Yeah.
Obviously, your fuck is Kyle MacLachlan.
Yeah. And then for Mary, I'm going to put Brie, because I just loved her mother growth
yeah.
in this episode. And I would love to have her as my partner. Someone who is reasonable. It sounds like it takes a while, but she comes around. She's open-ish. She's willing to, like,
yeah.
give and take, and I could see that. Kill Carl. I'm just like really sick of
okay.
him.
Okay. Okay. Yes. I also fuck Kyle MacLachlan.
Mm-hmm.
AKA what even is his name in this? It's like
it's Orson.
Orson. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sticks out to me like a sore thumb. I'm like, Orson.
Orson. I've heard that name. The whitest name ever. Yeah. So I will fuck him. I'm going to marry Mrs. McCluskey, because I think we can agree on parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she would just be a fun time. Like, oh my gosh, she would be such a hoot to be married to every day. And I have to obviously kill Carl as well, because he's doing the most to fuck everybody up in this mm-hmm. entire suburb. So there we go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Not as thrilling as it could have been, but mm-hmm. solid. We'll call that one solid.
Mm-hmm.
For Housewife of the Week, this is a bit harder for me. I might have to nominate Brie.
I think Brie's the only one I could think of that really was like, because Susan, no, Gabby, no, neither of them were really housewifey. They didn't really do anything that great. They learned their lessons, but they didn't really do anything. Lynette, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. I feel like Brie went above and beyond to connect with her son in a way that we haven't seen before. She really tested her own boundaries. We know that she's uncomfortable with him being gay, but she extended the olive branch to Justin,
mm-hmm.
and I respect that a lot from her. And she stood up to her stepmother, her evil stepmother,
mm-hmm.
and I just have a lot of respect for her. Housewife of the Week.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Everything that you said.
Aww.
Thumbs up.
And now we have our Apple rating.
Okay. I'm like, shit. Let me look over my notes really quick.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm like ready, and I'll have a disclaimer on mine.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1, 4.5. Dang, you went low.
I almost said four.
My disclaimer was that I would actually give this higher, but I couldn't say this is better than last episode. And I gave last episode 4.5.
Okay.
But I think that they were on the same... Last episode was a little better even. But 4.5 feels even... I wish... Okay, this is what I wish. If I could go back in time.
Okay.
4.75 for last episode and 4.5 for this one. They are both really high to me. I liked the character development that we are seeing in Bree. Mm-hmm. I liked the fun... energy of Lynette's storyline with I love a Mrs. McCluskey moment. Mm-hmm. Susan, even though she's still stupid, I feel like we're getting somewhere eventually, hopefully, with this. Like, hopefully this is last we see of Carl for a while. I think Orson will come back. Mike was featured. Like, I'm hoping something else will happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping we're setting up something good. And Gabby was also a fun one. I wouldn't quite call it a throwaway, but she's learning as well. So I feel like all the characters hit the theme of shame. They're all learning about themselves and others, and I felt good about that.
All great points. The only reason why I kept this one lower, it's like what you were feeling about Susan's episode or Susan last episode is how I'm feeling this episode. I feel like last episode should have been the moment where she, like, kicked Carl away and threw shit at him.
Yeah.
So I guess I felt frustrated that they dragged it out for another episode.
Yeah.
I'm a little like, and I was frustrated by her sleeping with him because it does go against, I feel like, a lot of the personal growth she's apparently had the whole season.
True.
So I was kind of like, this just feels like yet another way to, I don't know. I was just like really thrown off. It threw me off. However, happy to see Kyle MacLachlan in there. I really enjoyed Lynette's storyline, even though it was a one-off. It was strong because I think it's a very real parenting moment. And that's a housewifey. It's called Desperate Housewives, so it makes sense. Bree's storyline I thought was actually a really great continuation of what she's dealing with. It was kind of nice to get a break from the AA stuff as much.
Yeah, the emancipation lawsuit. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, we're kind of settled there.
And we got more of her backstory, which I liked. And then... Gabby's story, it was, yeah, I agree. It was a throwaway. It was just kind of a mom moment again.
Yeah.
Like, she's figuring out who she is as a mother, and I liked that. It was nice to see Zhao Mei again because they brought her in and they really set it up that she was going to be more present than she's been. So I kind of liked that. Like I said, I liked the fun little Paul moments sprinkled throughout. So that's why I initially wanted to give it a 4, but I went to 4.25 because I thought it had more merit than.
But
I did really enjoy this episode, don't get me wrong.
Still high, we're up here.
Yeah, so I was like, overall, I really enjoyed it.
Dang. Well, that wraps everything up for us. Mm-hmm. We love to hear from you guys always. You can like us on anywhere, I guess. I don't know. Like, rate, review.
Yeah.
Follow.
Yeah.
We're not on YouTube. I guess on YouTube they say that. Like, rate, review, follow.
Yeah.
But if you could go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review and 5 stars, that would be great. You can follow us on Spotify. We appreciate it. Follow us on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Check out our Twitter. We post in between every episode. And like I said at the beginning, we post every month, or we drop a new episode every Monday. So you'll hear us then. And next week we're doing season 2, episode 20. We're almost done. There's 24 episodes. We're really in the home stretch.
Well, the last episode is actually technically 23 episodes because it's like a two-parter. But it was like aired as one. So I think we should watch it.
Okay. Super excited. So we're there almost. So if you've been following along, we appreciate it so much and happy that you're listening. And until next time, we can leave you with our words of wisdom to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbor.